Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And my name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. And you can also join us on our Discord if you want to hang out there and suggest things. I just made a joke about how we should review all the NFT cartoons that have recently come out. That is apparently a new wave of garbage. But we will not be reviewing those. Do not worry. That was me just. I just watched a bunch of videos on NFTs to find out what a huge scam they are. And like apparently there are a whole bunch of cartoons related to them as they like try to make themselves legitimate. We will not be
I
reviewing
did
them.
not know that that was a thing at all.
Oh, there's like literally dozens of them now. They are also they're all like super. So most of them are super cheaply animated, but they're like one or two are on the horizon. Like one of them has like I think like the voice of Twilight Sparkle got involved. One of them has Dan Harmon. I don't know, like one of two of them like actually seem to have money, but most of them so far have been like the cheapest, like Newgrounds cartoons look better than these things.
Well, we will not be bringing you that fresh garbage, but we will be bringing you all the fresh garbage from winter 2022 anime season.
It wasn't all.
But first,
We have a new segment. We decided about this last year. I was going to start it in January, but we kind of talked about it just by the natural course of talking about the year. So, this is the first official Type Moon Minute where I will, for a few minutes, try to talk about all the Type Moon news from the month until Kate cuts me off because she feels like she's just going into a coma and needs to cut me off to live.
here is my promise to our audience is that I am like the bartender, okay? So I'm gonna cut Al off his drink limit. I'll have to have to put a hard stop on that and put him home, put him in a cab and send him home. So I promise to do that. But
You're
I think this
drunk,
is
Al.
a
Go
great
home.
idea. I think this is a great idea. I think we, this is the first of many things we're thinking about for the new year. So,
So, I hopefully have 3 points that I will talk about in an appropriate amount of time for our first Type Moon Minute.
I like that you've called it a minute and have already promised for it to be multiple minutes.
Because Type Moon Minute rolls off the tongue better than Type Moon Minutes. I guess that also just makes it, then it makes it sound like the minutes of a meeting. Plus, what do you call it? What do you call it? The Awesome Cast has their Dragon Quest Minute, and it's often several minutes. So I'm repeating the fine tradition of anime podcasts where you say something is a minute, but it's actually multiple minutes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say lying and not knowing what you're talking about. Those are those
Is a it
traditions.
is a, is just the brand of Reverse Thieves. Okay. You could go with either explanation. It's like what is Blackbird from the Beatles about? There are like several different conflicting stories of what that song is about from the Beatles themselves. So my first thing is hopefully quick. I'm very much looking forward, as I mentioned. I did not get to see the Solomon movie because of it was supposed to play in theaters, but COVID nonsense made that not possible. But the week that we are recording it will that we are recording this. There, it will be on Crunchyroll. So me and my roommate have already looking forward to seeing the Solomon movie, which is the kind of final part of the first arc of FGO. It got good reviews in Japan. It's kind of a big emotional finale to the first major story of FGO. So, and it's got a whole bunch of different characters making cameos in it. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I am sure that my Typhoon Minute next month will just be taking up me saying my quick review of Solomon if we don't just make it a whole segment. But that's that. The second thing is I just wanted to talk a little bit about this year's Valentine's event in FGO. Every year in FGO, they have a Valentine's Day event that is always new. And this year, they had one of my favorite Typhoon characters incorporated into the event. That's Bazette. She's from Fate Hollow, and she was like kind of the main character of Fate Hollow, which is the sequel to Fate's Day Night. And her character, she's like an Irish magus, and she had this one like magical item that was called Answerer. And in FGO, they basically merged her with the original like Irish hero that made Answerer. And so I was just very glad to see that they finally got Bazette. Since they had like incorporated most of the original Fate's Day Night cast into Fate Grand Order, I was glad to see that they got Bazette in from Fate Hollow. Although I was very disappointed with all the people who like have only played FGO and like were like, oh, I guess, the actual Typhoon fans care about her, but whatever, she's just some purple haired chick. And I was like, for shame, for shame. But yeah, I was glad. I think they incorporated her well into the game. She has like an interesting like kind of a counter mechanic that's unique to her. And I think they meshed her well with a very appropriate Celtic hero. So I was very glad to see her in the game. And my last bit in this segment is Wonderfest happened via the internet this year. And there were a whole bunch of Fate Grand Order characters. That's not surprising. But there were a whole bunch of Tsukihime figures for thanks to Tsukihime Remake. So that was very cool to see. A bunch of mostly either Seal or Arc figures, but one or two other characters got figures. Although I feel like Tsukihime Remake's only really gonna take off when it gets an anime, Witch on a Holy Night kind of has lingered in this weird space where only like hardcore, even though it got like a full visual novel, only hardcore Typhoon fans really speak anything about it. But since it's getting an anime this year, I'm very curious to see how much that changes. I feel like it will once it gets like a full anime. I'm guessing the same thing will be for Tsukihime Remake, but we'll see that in the future. I also wanted to mention that our mutual friend Carl pointed out a bunch of cool marine figures. That's not Typhoon, that's Hololive, but I just wanted to mention that they look pretty cool. And I was going to give Kate a segue to talk about any, what do you call it, Wonderfest figures that she was interested in, but as she mentioned before the podcast, she didn't even realize Wonderfest had happened this year.
You know, I don't even know what I do with my time anymore. That's it. The
I don't think I rambled
inaugural
on too long about anything. Given how much I can ramble about stuff, I feel like I was an appropriate amount of Al Rankel.
I think this is going to be, an excellent, I think it's just an excellent outlet. All right, so on to the new season. So, as Al said, it's not all hot garbage, but it sounds more fun to say that it is.
And
So I
do
think
not
we're gonna
worry, we did watch some hot garbage. And we didn't even watch all the worst shows. I'm sure like someone would be like, ah, this show was worse. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure. That's why I didn't watch it.
Yeah, this was the shows that we either thought weren't gonna be bad or like had, I don't know. Anyway, like I know there was a show this season that I didn't even finish the episode of. Like that's I feel like maybe my tolerance is changed. I have no idea. But anyway, so that's not
And
everything
we
though.
finished the whole episode of Tesla Note, which says a lot.
I was with a group of people. That is, I feel like
If you had been
it
alone.
makes a difference. It makes a difference. So we will talk about a few things that we both watched due to COVID times. We have not watched anything actually together, but hopefully we'll get back to be doing that again. I thought we were back to it, and then we had a break again, and back and forth. So, and then we'll talk about a few things that the two of us checked out individually, and then we'll end with the grand finale. So, to start this, I feel like we got to go. There's a few different directions how we go here, but I think we're gonna go like serious, in a really melodramatic way. So, Requiem for the Rose King. So this was one that I was kind of looking forward to. I knew that it was inspired by Shakespeare's Richard III, so that to be honest, I've never actually read that play of his, but that was just intriguing because it's not like we, I feel like in the West we get a million things inspired by Shakespeare all the time, every year, but we don't necessarily see that as much in anime, so I thought that was pretty, interesting.
I mean, anime isn't shy from basic things on Western sources, but it is an interesting pick. It's not like Alice in Wonderland or something that's like quintessentially adopted by the Japanese. Plus, I knew about this show only because I know it's like the manga's based on won a bunch of awards. And it did have a bit of a like a smart fan build up for it. So it felt like one that you should just watch. For general prestige, like this show is probably going to be like solid because it has like a like some positive seals of approval.
So in this story, we kind of come into this family that's warring, War of the Roses, and they are feuding, I should say, with another family.
Isn't War of the Roses is adapted from Game of Thrones?
What? What?
No, the joke is that Game of Thrones, the basic storyline, is based on the War of the Roses. Like George R. R. Martin has mentioned that, like he based a lot of the politics of Game of Thrones on the actual historical War of the Roses.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Requiem of the Rose King, actually just Game of Thrones. Whether you think that's good or bad, just up to you to decide. Richard is the youngest child in the family, and Richard is trying to live up to the two brothers and the dad who is vying for the throne. And there's just a lot of tension in this story at the beginning. Didn't you think, Al, like it's very atmospheric?
Yeah, because it's very clear that the dad has a lot of affection for Richard. The mom has quite the opposite. The rest of the family seems to have very mixed opinions on Richard. Richard has very mixed opinions on Richard.
That's actually very true. I think Richard is definitely battling some internal demons.
I mean, the fact that they have this like delusion of Joan of Arc chastising them constantly in their head should say volumes.
And so in the first episode, we kind of go through a few periods of time very quickly up to like where the main story is going to be. And so we see Richard sort of is also very isolated and kind of has these, I feel like delusions isn't the right word, but it's that youth. Richard has this youthful idea of what it means to be king, what it means to be in power, like these sort of ideas of power versus like what the reality of ruling is and like the violence inherent in it and like just having no experience with the world, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And then meets a couple of people in this first episode that not only add incredible melodrama to the story, but really starts to shift Richard's understanding of the world.
And it's very interesting because this is almost an adaptation of an adaptation, because Richard III is a play that's a very like melodrama. Like, clearly Shakespeare was not like, this is actually how things happen. This is a complete historical reenactment of the, War of the Roses. It's a His version of Richard III very clearly has some political theming and dramatic, liberties. Like, it is not supposed to be a his, a exact dramatic version of, an exact replica of what happened in the War of the Roses. It's very clearly a drama based on the War of the Roses. And then this is a very different, then it takes that version of the War of the Roses and completely puts its own spin on it. Although I did read, and I'm very curious, I should have researched more into it, that this parts of this story are inspired or based on an earlier draft of Richard III, not the Richard III that we would see in most, if you see a stage play, if you go to a theater and see, the Royal Shakespearean version of Richard III, it would not be this version. It's an earlier version. How much or what that is, what the mangaka took, I don't know, but supposedly this is based on an earlier draft of Richard III.
And for those who aren't familiar with the story, and again, like I said, I haven't actually read it. I just know a couple of points about it. But as I'll said, I mean, a lot of Shakespeare stuff is like political, like it's using old kings to, criticize current policy. Like it's a roundabout way of being able to do that politically. And then also Richard in Shakespeare's version has a hump on his back and he's kind of considered this sort of like cursed being. So like this story reinterprets that in a totally different way. So like that's kind of a big factor. And then like really tiptoeing around what that is, because also I don't feel like I totally 100% know what it is. It's just like from the first episode, you get a bunch of information, and there's just a lot of things at play. I also don't know if there's like a lot of if there's real magic or if it's imagined in this story.
Yeah, because like I said, Richard at points thinks that Joan of Arc is talking to them, and it's not clear if, yeah, is this a story with magic? Is this like a kind of like a Macbeth kind of, or is that just like signs of Richard's, kind of tormented psyche and possible, psychological damage.
Right, which is again in Shakespeare, a lot of people in Shakespeare hear things or see things, and it's kind of up to you as the viewer to interpret like whether or not is Hamlet really having a breakdown, or is it all made up, or like is there a ghost? Isn't there a ghost? You know, like all of those things are all there for you to interpret. So I'm very curious to watch more of this. This was definitely one that felt, you know, really different than anything else, certainly, that we're getting right now. And in a way that I felt like, oh, I gotta know. I gotta know what happens.
Also, it just felt like a very reverse Steve show. Like, I feel like this.
Fine, we're predictable.
It feels like a show that we would review on the podcast. It just seems very much like, oh, like let's take our own thing of something historical, but also our own take on a famous literary work. Kind of got an interesting melodrama history, and it's very reverse thieves. It's probably the most reverse thing thieves on this list.
Yeah, there's no detective shows. All right. So moving on from that, I'm gonna go to something that has a lot of politics, but is way less serious, or kind of less serious. It just looks less serious. But I would say that a lot of bad shit happens in the first episode of Sabakui Bisco. So very different show from Requiem of the Rose King, but still I felt like had some darker vibes to it that is just obscured by its bombast. So this, go ahead.
You know what it reminded me a lot of? Like, it felt very 90s OVA, kind of like that. Like, it didn't have like that, like, it had a very modern animation style, but just kind of like the way the world building was done, the way that like you had like violence, but a little bit of like political talk, but like not very like direct, kind of like it's there if you want it to be, kind of the violence and just all of that, and like but also kind of like this wacky, like when I think a lot of people our age think of, who aren't into anime but know about anime, think about anime kind of vibe to it.
No, I totally agree with all of that, Al. I actually would go a step further and say it had, to me, it had Trigun vibes. Like kind of the world, the kind of wackiness of the characters in the world, but like this post-apocalyptic, the kind of the criminal vigilante who is wanted but might actually not be the, like, you know, like the identity is like not quite what they think it is, and like what his role is in the world. I don't know. Yeah, I really thought, I agree with that. It had like some old school vibes to it,
Yeah, very.
even though it had sort of a modern style to it.
Yeah, very like late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
And so we kind of start off the story in this city that is almost like this oasis, I guess you could say, in this post-apocalyptic world that is being ravaged by this disease called the Rust. And it comes from these giant mushroom spores that appear in the land and sometimes appear in the city. And Bisco might be involved with like spreading them around the world.
He definitely is knowledgeable about it and
I
definitely has
mean,
some
they call him
connections
a
to it.
mushroom terrorist, which is an incredible title to have. And I do wonder if it has some, you know, I think it has some environmental vibes to it too. Could like,
Well, it's also very much a class thing because there's like the city is like, like the super dis even though it's you mentioned it as Oasis, it's definitely like a super dystopia kind of, the high city where all, there's the high technology and the people live, the glamorous life, but that's only like the top 10%, and like everybody else is kind of living in the squalid, under city that's, better than the outside, but still clearly, this dystopian hellscape where, the martial law doesn't say it's martial law, but it's clearly, got its jackboot down on the people.
right, because we get the other kind of point of view character that we have is Milo, who is the panda, quote unquote, the panda doctor. And he is kind of like runs a free clinic for this neighborhood. And people are always like, oh, you could be making so much money. You could be doing all this other stuff. And like this, he's like, yeah, but that's not what I want to be doing. And then we find out that he's also like a secret mushroom experimenter, and not like drugs. I don't know, that made him sound like this is not a show as far as so far about like taking shrooms or anything. But he's experimenting on them because he thinks that maybe they have properties that could cure diseases, especially the disease, the rust itself. Like he feels like the answer is sort of like in the, it's like the answer is in the question or whatever. And you see how he's treated, you see the neighborhood through his point of view, and I'm very interested to see sort of how the paths continue to cross with Bisco and him.
Oh, also Milo, when he call it, is trying to discover the cure because his motorcycle riding sister has the rust.
She's part of the martial law.
Yeah.
And I absolutely, so my favorite part of this show, even though it was, I thought it was pretty much fun from every minute, but the best part is like Bisco, who you clearly as the audience member like know is Bisco the whole time, but him trying to get in the city is that just scene is, again, I felt like that felt very Trigun to me, that whole scene. And it was really fun. And this is based on a light novel.
See, Kate, not all light novels are horrible. I just mentioning that scene, I feel like you, as the audience, you're never told up until the obvious reveal, but I feel like you're supposed to know. It's the whole idea of like, all right, we know this goes wrong. When is it going to go wrong? When are they going to find out it's Bisco?
Yeah, I feel like it has really good a really good sense of timing and like the comedic, you know, it just I thought it really did a nice job there. So I wasn't really expecting a lot, but it was recommended to me as like, no, this is like a because this light novel is licensed in English. So it was like, oh no, this is like a good, you know, a good one or whatever. And so I'm really looking forward to watching more of this show.
Like I said, it definitely, especially considering our audience, it does kind of have some fun throwback vibes while having a modern aesthetic. Yeah, I think it's worth. I'm curious to watch more of it just to see where it goes. Like, I thought it did an interesting amount of world building in the first episode without burying you in exposition.
So we go from that to Tribe Nine, which is a show that I felt like was trying to be Skate the Infinity, but not succeeding at it.
It also just has the most anime opening, explanation to its, premise. Like, it's the other show that feels like, if you ask somebody who grew up in the 90s what anime is, they'd, describe a show like this.
So we've got extreme baseball in the future with future tech, and it's used to resolve all conflicts. Like, and again, also actually, not only is that's not like Skate the Infinity. What this is like Hypnosis Mike, where rap battles resolve all conflicts. But in this one, extreme baseball resolves all conflicts.
I just have to say, I love the super anime. Like, there's this rebellion of youth, and they started these inter-Japan gang wars, and they outside basically the government had to step in and find a way to resolve these civil get these. Gang wars that were so much, it basically turned into a civil war that was tearing Japan apart. And for no reason I assume that will ever be explained, somehow they just propose, oh, instead of this, a robot jocks. Like, oh, there was terrible war that could not be, it was killing too many people, and for reasons we will never explain, they're resolved by either robot battles or extreme baseball battles.
I mean, to be fair, we don't want them to explain
Yeah,
it
oh no.
because, like, again, Hypnosis Mike has like almost the exact same premise. So, like, that is fine. But I just felt like execution-wise, I just wasn't buying it. Like, it was, I don't know, it just felt sort of like I didn't. This is going to be weird to say based on what we've just explained. But it doesn't feel like they really thought it through that much. Like, I feel like if you're going to come up with a really dumb premise for your world, I'm okay with that. But it's like you need to commit to it and like really think about how it works. And I just, it kind of felt like extreme baseball just feels like you can just do anything. Like, people have lightsaber bats. They have like powered armor suits. They play baseball in like by city blocks. Like it's like not, you know, on a baseball diamond. And you can fight people to get on base. Like it's just, I don't know. I don't know.
I think
What
I
does that make sense
actually
what I'm saying? Is like I felt like they didn't really.
I think you're right, But I think there's two major flaws that, because I was just analyzing the show, like, after we had like a short conversation about it, outside of like the podcast, just that as normal Kate and Al chatting on the internets, because we can't chat in real life. One, I think the problem is there's no, especially from the first episode, and maybe this will improve, like, it's hard to tell anybody's like power level or capability. Like you said, everybody just, since it's just like anything goes martial arts, it's like it's hard to tell like how powerful anybody is supposed to be and like how much dramatic tension is in anything. Like, I feel like this has been said about like Mahjong anime, like the good ones are the ones that even if you don't understand Mahjong, which most people don't, like they build this tension of like, oh, is this guy in trouble or not? And I felt like the show had a bad sense of like how much trouble anybody was in at any point, which I think is just important. Like Skate the Infinity, you always knew like how much trouble this skater that the main characters were up against was supposed to be. And I feel like that's the main, like that's the most vital. Maybe the other one, but this one was like one of the most vital things. I was like, all right, are these corporate guys, how much danger are they to the main characters? Like, how powerful are any of them supposed to be? Am I supposed to be worried? Was this supposed to be a cakewalk one? It was very unclear. I think that's what led a lot to it. And then the other problem is, like, I don't know. None of the characters, like, Skate the Infinity. I didn't watch Hypnosis Mike, but Skate the Infinity, you click with, you know, with Snow and it's, you know, his best totally not homosexual friendship with Recky, was it? Because, like, I saw what they were doing. Like, you got the guy who's the Milk and Toast guy, and they had to have the scene where, like, the main, like, cool dude is supposed to have the, like, but I sense potential in you. And he's like, nah, you're a Milk and Toast sad sack. And like calls him out on it as opposed to like, I see the hidden potential in you. But at the end he does see the hidden potential in you, so what do you call it? So how much was that subversion really worth anything if they just went back to the same formula at the end of the episode? And then you've got like the fishing guy who's like all bluster but doesn't actually know the true depth of the world. Like, I feel like they had these stereotypes and wanted to like have like little subversions on them, but in the end, the little subversions didn't really mean anything, and they're really actually the cliche characters you know. And so it felt like they weren't confident in the cliche characters, but they still stuck to them anyway, which I felt like I feel like you either have to realize that these characters are archetypes and make them enjoyable or subvert them in interesting ways. But if you just like minorly subvert them but stick to it, it's kind of the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, I do think there weren't strong personalities or strong characters. I mean, Hypnosis Mike is bad, so that's not a good, that's not like, if Skate the Infinity was actually good, and that was really on the strength of its characters and treating its characters like fully robust, thoughtful, like first episode, you know who those characters are and like you want to root for them, and you know, like I think it just fell kind of flat in this series. So
Yeah, and once again, just to praise Skate the Infinity, I feel like it takes his characters super serious and gives them super depth, even though it realizes its premise and world and the situations it's putting these characters in is utterly ridiculous.
more of that, please.
I feel like the problem is Tribe Nine wants to do all those things, it just doesn't execute it as well.
So, moving on to Sasaki and Miyano. So, this is it based on a manga? I'm trying to remember. I think it's licensed.
It really felt like something that was based, maybe, not on a four coma, but definitely like a short chapter manga.
I got the same impression, Al. I don't know if that's actually true or not. This is about two high school boys who become friends and then also maybe have crushes on each other. Sasaki, I think, is much more clear in the first episode. Like, he has this realization about himself, like, that he has feelings, but I don't know. I don't think it's clear from episode one if like Miyano feels the same way, but it definitely felt like that's where it's going. But at the same time, I got a lot of like slice of life vibes from it, so it could be a show where nothing ever changes. I don't know. I feel like it could go either way.
Well, I felt like, so I had very, like, my opinion on the show changed by what half it was in. Because, like, the first half feels very, like, slice of life, kind of like, I'm a guy and I'm into boys' love manga. And here's, like, my friend who's, like, my idealized, like, partner. But then, like, the second half felt a little more like, oh, this is like a character struggling with feelings and stuff. So I'm like, what show is this? There is a tonal shift.
No, I agree with that. I also feel like maybe some of that comes from, I thought the way it's executed was very weird in terms of pacing, because we start the story just like in an everyday thing, and then there's like three or four flashbacks in this first episode, and it's like a little disoriented. Like, I didn't really understand why that was the like the decision about how to tell this story, because it doesn't feel like a story that needs to start in the middle so that we can be like super, you know, like, oh, something incredibly dramatic is happening and we must now tell this story from like the middle so we don't know what's going on. It's like it's just a friendship, romance, relationship story. Like, why are we jumping back and forth in time? I thought that was really, because there was a part two where I wasn't clear, like, was this happening in the past or like is that happening right now? And there was no reason for it.
Well, the first part is very linear. It's the second half, like, I feel like they were trying to be clever, where like, here's what you saw happen and here's how you think it happened, but here's the other character's perspective, but that's the one that jumps around the most. And like, yeah, I too had to be like, oh, okay, this happened beforehand. Okay. And like, yeah, it took me the same amount. I was initially confused when went to the second half when things were happening as well. And it took me a little bit to figure out that the other character was like kind of telling his story weirdly out of order.
It just didn't, I get that maybe we're getting two perspectives, but I just did not think that that worked really well. I thought it was not, I didn't think it added anything. But one of the things I did like about the show was that I thought it was very cutesy, which was nice, fun. You know, it's just like soft. And I thought it was also a series where it felt like they were getting all the trope moments like out of the way. It was like, oh, let me just check box so that we could like move on. Like they will share an umbrella. They will like one of them will make cookies for the other in like home ec. Like they oh one of them will like give you a Band-Aid. Like it was like okay, like but it was like let's just bam 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 bam. All of these things happened. Okay, now here's like the real story.
Like, what is the tone of the show?
Yeah, and so I think by the end, you kind of don't know, like, okay, so is it this like growing relationship story or is it a slice of life show? So, like, stay tuned for episode two.
I'm not sure what my opinion on the show is because, what do you call it? Like, your first episode did not give me the, like, did not give me a good sense of your full tone.
Well, that show was clearly I'm Kodama Kawashira, the dissolute life of a dangerous life hacker.
I'm pretty sure that sure tells you what tone it has right from the start, Kate.
Even the title tells you everything. It's the one time I actually liked a really long title for a show. These are 2 minute episodes, so everybody can just go ahead and watch it.
It's a show that has like a almost full opening, so really it's a 1 minute show with an opening.
Very true. And it's basically about how to lead your most aimless life, I think, and like
Yeah, it's about like a mangaka and her like basically like I guess only slightly exaggerated stories about how she lives her horrible life.
just to be as lazy as possible. Yeah, I mean, no reason not to watch. Has a really fun art style, I think. So, really good expressions on the characters. So that's always fun.
So, Tokyo 24th Ward. I watched this with my roommate. Kate did not watch it. So now we're in the section of shows that only one of us watched. So I'm not sure about this show because I didn't finish. Did I ever go on the podcast my like review of Battle of the Athletes? Victory restart. Don't
I
remember.
think so.
Just like that show, like was like, you know what we should do? We should handle stuff like the conflicts in the Middle East. That's what Battle Athletes Victory Restart should tackle. And it tackles them about as well as a show that is Battle Athletes Victory Restart does. So it's almost like an object lesson in don't exceed what your show can do. And I'm not sure how much Tokyo 24 Ward falls into that. So it's this show, it starts off. And like there's this big fire at a school and like this band of friends who like want to be like heroes when they grow up, they lose like one of the female friends who was part of the group, and they kind of like become very disillusioned and fall. They like kind of like have they drift apart and they're brought together by like a class reunion like a decade later. And they've kind of all taken separate paths in life, and they meet to kind of like remember their friends who they lost, and they kind of run into each other, and it's a little bit awkward. And then they get like this message from this like weird computer that seems to have some connection to their dead friend. Like it takes their image and seems to be like some kind of like AI ghost of them. It gives them superpowers and like they're solving like issues in the city. And like it's very clearly a show that wants to have like political messages, because one of the friends who's like a hacker is like kind of like in this social justice kind of like criticizing the status quo. Like he's like an online like YouTube celebrity that like calls out the system. But one of the friends, his father is a politician, and he's like, I see the system is corrupt, but I'm going to try to change it from the inside. And then the other guy kind of is like, kind of in between, and he like was the one that was like hardest hit by not being able to save his friend. And so he's like trying to be like a local, like, good guy, but it's clear that like he has like trauma from the event. And so, like, and he's still dealing with it. Oh, and he has like parkour abilities. Like, literally, he has super parkour powers before he gets his real super parkour powers that basically make him be like a parkour superhero. And so, also, the thing is, it has like super modern anime aesthetic. So, like, it looks like almost like a, I wouldn't say kiddie, but like anime as heck show. And it feels like it's trying to like have a political message. I'm just, it's not blowing it so far. I'm just, with its aesthetic and the characters having like superpowers, because like the hacker guy gets like super hacking abilities, and like the kid who's like in the political family, he like has like almost like a supernatural Sherlockian ability to like discern if people are lying in their motives just from like their body language now. And like there is like, as far as I can tell, their friend got saved as like an AI that's like trying to help people and gave them their superpowers. And so like, I'm like mixed. I'm like curious to watch more of this show. I'm just a little, it feels like it wants to have a political message, but I wonder if it's in this, like, for the show you are you punching above your weight class here, show? Like, are you trying to take on like important Japanese political stuff, but you're like a silly, goofy cartoon show? Or are you a super goofy cartoon show because that's a easier way to make relevant social commentary? Or are you trying to do that, but you're gonna fall flat on your face? I'm not sure. Like, the first episode was like, you have potential, but I also feel like I easily could see how you are so ready to fall on your face. So, like, I admire it for trying to, like, say something and have, like, a message more than like friendship is power. But I just see how it could so easily go wrong. And like, it didn't like, whoa, no, this show is super smart. And like, it is like, it does feel kind of goofy. So I don't know. It's like one of those shows, like, maybe you should just wait and see how well it pulls this off, because I feel like it could be super frustrating if it like tries to have a political message but totally botches it. So like, it is a show that I could easily so see going either way, or like being middle of the road, and like maybe even pissing people off of like having potential, but not being bad enough to laugh at, but never being good enough to like realize what it could have been. So like that's even a third direction it could go in.
Do you think you'll watch more of it?
I'll probably give it a few episodes just to see how well it pulls off its premise. Yeah, I feel like 3 or 4 episodes will usually tell you. I mean, it could just botch it in the end and like, here are my bad politics, or here's how I'm clearly in over my head, but at the very end, but I'll give it a few episodes to just like see which direction it goes in.
I think political in a totally different way is Police in a Pod. I think this series has already, I think the internet has already sort of taken some shots at it, which I don't think are unfounded. But like so it's based on a manga, and like pretty sure that the mangaka like has specifically said like, oh, I want to encourage people to be police officers. So like I think especially I think the concept of the police is a fraught subject in all countries, but certainly right now in the US space it's particularly like at a sort of a height of where we're just questioning it a lot and like really investigating it and like trying to rethink it a lot, or at least many people are. So I think it's just not the moment for this show. And I don't think that the show is like taking itself super seriously, but I do think that there are some like first of all, it didn't make me want to be a police officer, I guess I would say. If anything, it made me not want to be one. Also, I don't think I actually fully finished the show. I actually can't remember, but like I think the thing that really, while this I would say is not, I would say this is very true. So there are like moments in it that felt very truthful, but I was like, is this being portrayed like positively? Like the way that they talk about civilians and like criminals is not like, it's just not, you're like, yeah, I imagine that that is exactly what you say, but that's not good. Like this is not per so it just comes off as like this maybe weird propaganda. So like, but it's not super serious, and like it's these two women, and like one woman is like about to quit, and then the other woman is like demoted to like going back. She was like a detective, and now she's been demoted to like police box duty and doing like traffic and elementary school visits and all this stuff. And so they like have the and but their vibe is a little weird. I don't know. And it also has like a, is it trying to be like sexy? Like are they, is it really like a sexy cops? I don't know. It just,
I think it also has like a kind of in successful in Japan live action version. I swear I remember somebody mentioning that. I'm sure it's more of the same.
yeah, I guess just sometimes it was like, isn't this funny? And I was like, actually, that's terrible. So, in a different vein, I watched the first episode of the Shenmue anime, not really out of my own choice. I was just like, okay, sure. I mean, what do I know about Shenmue? Capsule toy machines, forklifts. That's like those things. And for some reason, I had like gotten this confused with something else where I thought that like his sister was kidnapped. And I'm not sure what game I'm thinking of because I kept expecting that to happen. And I was like, he doesn't have a sister. Maybe it's the childhood friend or whatever lady.
Do you know of any places where sailors hang out? That's like the famous line that everybody always, that like
He's
got.
looking for a date. So yeah, so this is based on the kind of, would you call it a cult classic
Yeah.
game? I felt like that's about right. And it takes place in 80s Japan, and the main guy is in high school, and he's a sort of like a karate prodigy, maybe is too strong of a word, but his family has this legacy of karate. He is like on the karate team, and in the first episode, sort of his dad's past catches up with him and he's killed. And then we start to find out that there's like kind of this underworld karate dojo drama.
I was a little surprised that this got made at all, considering kind of the negative reception to Shenmue 3 after the Kickstarter kind of, had all this hype and then it kind of came out meh.
Well, this is a one of those like Adult Swim helped funded and stuff like that. So I think they're just banking on that earlier, not the later, but the earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And also the ending has like him driving a forklift. Like they basically like lean into the memes in like the ending animation for this show. I don't have any particular affinity for Shenmue, so like it wasn't that exciting to me. And it also I thought had pretty bad like mid-2000s animation style to it, like both in I mean I feel like you could go either way on like how do you want to adapt these older character designs, and like I think maybe they were trying to be very true to the game, so like they didn't really update it, but I feel like it doesn't look good and it doesn't look like modern anime, and not in a way that like is really like nostalgic feeling, like Megalobox. It's not like that where it's like, oh, well, it's trying to create this like atmosphere. It just kind of looks a bit cheap, I think. But people who have played the games and have a love for the games would have differ. I don't know anything about them, so like whether or not this is a good ad adaptation, I have no idea. It just wasn't for me.
So I think we've been pretty like negative on the shows that we've been reviewing on our own. So I want to at least talk somewhat positively about one show that we watched individually. I figured, all right, Kate isn't gonna watch like any of the Isekai shows, so I should at least watch the one that doesn't look horrible. So I watched World of Liddell. Which I thought was like, all right, this has like a vaguely interesting premise. So there's this woman, and she's in a horrible accident that basically like completely paralyzes her, and she's basically on a life support machine. And so she spends her like remaining years just playing like this VR game that like she could at least play in her state, and it like gives her comfort in her last few years. And then one day there's a power outage at the hospital that she's at, and she dies because her life support falls off, and by the time the power is restored, she's passed away. And so that's basically like the first minute of the show. And then when she re-wakes, it seems her consciousness has moved either into the game or like the world of the game. But it's 200 years after she last remembers. So like 200 years of game time has passed since she was like last conscious. And now she inhabits the body of her character, and she quickly learns that 200 years has passed. Her character has become kind of like this infamous legend in the world. She has not found any other people playing the game, so she hasn't seen any other players. But she learns that any alt characters she made or any NPCs, like you could get like NPC followers that count as your children in the game, all of them have had children of their own and made legacies of themselves and like all these like alt characters and like children characters she had have become like rulers of their own kingdoms, changed the politics of the world, become heroes and villains. A little unclear what that means at this point, because the first whole first episode is basically the setup. Her dying, her like kind of finding out a little bit of what's changed in the world, this fantasy world that she used to play in, since she died in the real world, and then like kind of like realizing how much of a legacy she's had on this world. And that's about it. That's like where the first episode ends, that she basically goes back to like she owned this tower. It's her like in this town that she starts in, making friends with people there, like going off to her tower, reactivating it, and like the like guardian spirit kind of cluing her in about a little bit about how things have changed. So, this was the other show. I'm like not sure exactly what the tone is, or like it's very like it's kind of a chill show, but I'm like not sure what the greater narrative thrust is going to be, because it's kind of just this whole first episode is the premise, but I'm not like, is she going to become a hero? Is she learning? Is she just interacting with all her various descended characters? It's like she did mention, like the tower mentioned that, like, he's like, oh, 5 years ago, one of your sons came looking for you here recently and like trying to find out what happened to you since they haven't seen you in so long. So it's like pretty clear that at least like one of her, either her direct children or old characters or descendants, is going to like visit her probably in the next episode. But I'm like, is there a villain? Is this slice of life? Has one of her, descendants become an evil warlord and she's gonna have to like stand up to him or her, Is it just her goofy adventures in this world where, she's become a legendary character and there is no, overarching big plot? I'm not sure on it. I did feel like it was a different twist on the isekai. And oh, she is like, since she was like hospitalized and like basically all she could do was play this game, she was like a super high powered character. So it isn't the what I like to call the female version of, the isekai story where the woman starts off super low and has to build her way up. She is kind of in the more male vein where she is like this super powered character. It kind of reminds.
Oh, and she's a super high level character still, even though it's been this long.
Well, it's a little hard to tell, like if there have been ex quote unquote expansions, and now she's definitely super powered compared to the NPCs, but we haven't seen like any other PC style characters or any of her descended characters, so she might be like pale in comparison to them. But from what we know right now, she seems pretty high level. I think she's like a level 100. She has like crazy magical powers. Like most of the villagers have like super low level magic if they have magic at all. So she seems high powered, but we haven't met any other high powered characters yet. So like I'm not sure what my thoughts fully are on this show. Because like I don't feel like it's played all its cards yet in the first episode, and I'm not sure like what a typical episode of this show would be, because this just seemed like to be a very introductory to the premise show. Because I'm like, the show could be very boring. The show could be very interesting. The show could be problematic. The show could be fascinating. I'm not. It has a lot of potential to go kind of like with District 25. I keep saying it's District 34. It's not, but the 24 show where like it could go a lot of ways. I could easily see how it could be like an interesting show, and I could easily see how it could be a boring as hell or just horrible show. There wasn't anything that was like super sexual, which is always encouraging. So it seemed to avoid the like the worst traps of this genre. But also, once again, we fully haven't seen all the cards the show has to play, so I don't remember anything. If anything, the most worrying thing is it did seem like it might be just super slice of lifey from the opening. Like I didn't see anything that was like a clear villain character that might stand out as like a good conflict. But I mean, I like Log Horizon, and that show's like main conflict doesn't appear for a while, so it's another show I'm not exactly clear on. It doesn't seem to be the worst of the isekai genre, but I also wasn't like, oh man, it amazingly hooked me. I was more like, I'm curious to see where this goes, but like, not hooked, like, I need to see where this goes.
Just like Orient, right?
Oh, Orient, on the other hand, was a show that I watched it, and literally a week later, I was like, oh, Kate said we should both check out Orient. I should check out Orient. And then like I looked at it for a second, I was like, oh wait, no, I watched this show. It's the Warring States. It's like the height of the Warring States, and then all of a sudden there's an alien invasion, and all the Warring State most of I'm not sorry, most of the Warring State heroes are wiped out, and like the aliens now rule. And it almost is like a Gintama kind of era of so like it's still very kind of Sengoku, but the aliens have like their advanced alien technology. So it's kind of like a high-tech Sengoku era. But also like the humans are like they're like supposed to be like a happy, like, kind rulership, but it's clear that they're super evil aliens. But they're also like kind of like the aliens that we see before, like the Enforcer aliens come out. They kind of look like monster star cats, giant monster star cats. So they're almost kind of cutesy, but also a little bit monstery. But they're also like real monster enforcer aliens that show up at the very end. From their base of their since the aliens took over Mount Fuji, which shows how truly evil they are. And so it starts off with these two guys who admire the Warring State heroes, and they want to like be rebels that fight against the alien invaders. And like one of them is like a samurai guy, but it's kind of it's they try to contrast them with like the one guy who's the samurai guy. He seems like at first glance he's going to be the most rebellious one, but he's the one that's kind of like given in the most. And then there's the guy who's like working to like become a miner, but he secretly most has the rebel in his heart. And so like they're like, oh, we've trained you as miners enough, and we're gonna like give you to the exclusive, you know, you've passed like the mining academy and you're going to be big mining guys, but it's actually a trap and they're going to be super slaves. And so at the end, they both rebel together. And oh, the samurai guy also has a samurai era motorcycle. And they like fight the cute fuzzy aliens and defeat them easily, and then the real enforcer aliens come, and that's where the episode ends. And I don't know. Like, the premise is generic, the animation is generic, the characters are generic. It like literally was a show that was so generic I had forgotten I had watched it a week later, and only like me want if I had not forgotten that I had watched the show, I probably would have had to look up what the show was about when we started to talk about it on the podcast. It's not even a show that's so bad, like you like hate it. It's just so middle of the road that I forgot about it. And that's literally the best way I could sum it up.
I'm glad that I forgot to watch it.
Yeah, you. It's not even a show that's offensively bad. It's just forgettably bad.
So there were a couple of new sports show offerings this season with Futsal Boys with 5 exclamation points. And Salary Man's Club. I feel like we're a lot, you know, I still fondly remember my sports boys of years past, and so I still have an affinity for it, but I don't feel like besides Skate the Infinity, I love that we've been able to bring this up multiple times in a podcast. But you know, I don't feel like there's been a lot that stand as highly as like some of the ones from the past. But I'm always looking for new options every season. So, Futsal Boys is so futsal is like soccer, or it's pretty much soccer, but it has less players. And I was like reading, I was like, well, it's usually played indoors, but then like this first episode, they were playing outdoors. So I don't know if that's part of it or not. I was like, not sure. But anyway, less people for sure. And maybe it's played on like not real grass. I don't know. Anyway, who cares? I don't know why I'm trying to overexplain the sport. So we have kind of two, you know, guys with opposite personalities who team up at this outdoor court because some punks are bothering these kids and like trying to kick these kids off of the, you know, like get out of here, we want to use it. And so like they challenge them and you know, they make a good team, but they have like opposite personalities. So it's like pretty like typical setup, I feel. The punks are like really into it, like in a way that like probably goes too far. It was like I felt like they were too punk, they were too delinquent.
Kate, has such a word ever come out of your mouth?
I mean, not that they were too well, first of all, they weren't like the cool kind that are like your main characters. Like that would be totally different, Al. Like obviously these are like the bad delinquents. It was mostly kind of one of those like why are you trying so hard in this situation kind of thing. And you know, I don't know, like it just kind of actually kind of like Orient. I just found it really generic. Like the characters were so generic that it just didn't stand out in any way, like after I watched it. So it was just very like forgettable.
This is no haiku replacement.
I mean, Haikyuu isn't even finished, so it can't be replaced. Salaries Man's Club, on the other hand, is definitely unforgettable, but I don't know. I actually could not tell if I liked it or not. So, Salary Man's Club is about badminton teams, and in this case, doubles badminton specifically. And so the main guy, he is, so I guess the interesting thing here is that they're not high schoolers, they're working adults. And these clubs are all like part of their businesses. So it's like you have a job, but then your, company also has like their team. So the main character, he's working at this company, he's on a badminton team, he gets fired essentially. And just when he's sort of, that's happening, and he's sort of down and out, he gets this offer to come and play for this other team that he's not really familiar with, but it's sort of like they sought him out specifically, so he doesn't have really any other prospects, and he goes, and it's this beverage company, and he meets the, like, on his way to sort of his first day on the job, he meets this guy in a park who seems like, some bum, and the guy kind of plays a little trick on him, and then of course he ends up being like at the company and being like his new partner. So it's like his badminton partner and also his like work partner, and they of course have different personalities. And naturally, now, so this one adds in a favorite where there's past inter-high trauma. So like something terrible happened at the inter-high that is affecting our main character, and like his he doesn't want to play doubles, he doesn't want to be a team player, like some bad he's got some bad sad past. So the other thing that, so like that's all like fine. The other thing that really stands out about the show is the character designs. Like they're really, it's like these guys in really tight suits, I guess, is like it kind of makes me think of like the character design for what was that show with like the asshole millionaire who was
Oh yeah. I know what you
like just like this very like sexy character design, like a really specific type of character design for guys. So I think that like this show is really like leaning into that very much. The badminton in here was like they play a like a basically the main guy doesn't want to be on a doubles team, so like the other guy's like, well, if I beat you, then you are like, so they have like a match in the episode. And like it was like pretty okay, like it was pretty entertaining. But yeah, I just wasn't, I'm not sure yet. Like I like this a lot more than futsal because it did have like much more drama. It had really like specific characters and stuff, and like the fact that they're like salarymen is like, I guess, like interesting. I just wasn't sure if like the characters were clicking with me personally, but I thought that this was just like a better executed show. So like maybe.
That seems fair. It does. It's not giant killing, but what do you call it? You at least are intrigued enough to maybe watch the second episode, whereas futsal, you'd be like, oh, I watched episode one.
Exactly.
I guess since this is technically considered a sport, I'll talk about slow loop. So we start off on a pier, and there's this girl, and she's kind of into fishing because her dad got sick and passed away not that long ago. And he was a very eccentric guy, and one of the things he was into was fly fishing, and he taught his daughter, and like to kind of like keep his memory together, she's like fly fishing on the pier, kind of remembering dad, and like thinking about, man, some big changes happened in my life, so I'm just gonna relax on the pier. And then this girl, it's like the middle of winter, and this girl's gonna jump into the ocean, and she stops her at the last minute, and they kind of have a conversation, and she teaches her a little bit about fishing, and they're like, "Oh, I gotta go." The main girl goes, "My mom just got remarried, and I'm gonna meet my, what do you call it, my new dad and his daughter." And she's like, "Wow, that is crazy, because what do you call it? I'm going to a dinner and I'm gonna meet my new mom and her daughter from another marriage." And so they realize, oh, we're actually, what do you call it? They realize that, what do you call it, they're talking about each other. And so there's kind of two stories going on. It's the one girl teaching the other girl about fishing, but also them, you know, basically being sisters and living together in the same house. And that's pretty much, as far as I could tell, the main story going forward. Them bonding over fishing. Also, the main girl can fish, but she can't cook at all, and the other girl is very good at fishing, at cooking. So, what do you call it? She can cook up the fish that they catch. And it is extremely slice of lifey. Like, if that was not immediately obvious, I am sure that Kate, just by visuals alone, figured that out. But it's slice of lifey as hell. There is a little bit of like drama, because like the dad's like study gets turned into, you know, the other girl's like bedroom, and like she's like, "Oh no, it's super cool," and like they're like, "Are you sure? 'Cause like, you know, this is your dad's old room, and he didn't die like that long ago." 'Cause like, I could not, and like, you know, they kind of resolve that at the end and talk it out. But so like, it does feel like there's a little bit of drama in like their new living relationship. It's not all like the softest of fluffy fluff, but it is pretty fluffy fluff. I didn't really object to anything in the show, but I also wasn't like, man, I look forward to seeing some more fishing girls. This definitely was not Suratama, I'll tell you that right off the bat. Like, Kate, you would be bored to fucking tears. Like, and they're like, "Kate, you should really check out this show. I think there's some interesting drama in like fishing." No, like, I don't really feel like I should go forward. You should avoid the show like the plague. It would, what do you call it, just put you into like a 20-minute like nap. You're like, the show's over. Where was I? But I didn't see anything objectionable. It was just nothing that sold me either. The next show, Miss Kuritsu from the Monster Development Department. In this world, there are basically tokusatsu heroes and tokusatsu villains all over Japan. And as we've learned, there have been countless villainous organizations that have tried to take over Japan and then the world, and they have been struck down by their corresponding tokusatsu heroes. And we start in a certain prefecture with another organization, that also, they show a bunch of shows that I thought were made up, but it says at the end they're actually all actual tokusatsu like actual live action tokusatsu shows that they just animated into the show as like, here are the other failed organizations. Like, there weren't any ones that I recognized, though. There wasn't like any like Kamen Rider. They were all like kind of more obscure ones. The main show is there is basically it is the office drama of the so basically the evil organization is run like a company, and the main girl is part of leads like this monster development team, and they basically make various monsters and they like pitch them to the evil overlords of the organization, and you know, like they have to like, all right, here's how we're in budget, and like these are the features that we think will defeat the mo you know the hero this week, and you know they have to deal with like the politics between the various you know overlords of the you know the organization. So it's kind of like a little bit of office comedy, a little bit of like it's a kind of like Sun Red mixed with an office comedy. The first week is like it's like set into two. Like the first half is about they all have like no inspiration. So like somebody like just fires off a shitty design like 10 minutes before the meeting, and they and like the main character has to like she has to sell this obviously shitty design to the organization, and then it gets passed through and the monster is easily defeated because it's obviously shitty design despite the fact that you know she sold it up. And then the second one is they make like this ultimate wolf boy, and then like the head of the organization decides to make it a cute wolf girl instead, and then that's that monster. And apparently that monster becomes like part of the team from the opening. So like there's a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. Like I like the premise. The comedy is pretty good, but it is a little pandery. Like the head of the evil organization is like this lolly girl, and like the main girl is very clearly your like standard cutesy anime girl, scientist type, and like the wolf monster, like oh no, one of her design defects is like her clothing easily comes off and she's naked by the end of the battle, and that's why she has to run away and doesn't get defeated. So like there's definitely some pandery fan service side to this. It's not like totally Sun Red, but like I don't know, the premise is pretty cute. Like some of the comedy is good, but it definitely distinctly has some pandery aspects. Like so, you know, it's definitely like gonna sell some people and turn some people off. It's not totally fan servicey. Like, it definitely has its strength in comedy, but you can't ignore the fan service as well. So I'm looking forward to watching a little more to see. Like, I am a little worried that like the fan service could. We've seen shows like this, so like, oh, the comedy's good, and you know the fan service is there, and but like after a while, the fan service becomes the comedy and becomes like totally hard to ignore. So I hope the show doesn't go that way, but you know, I'll watch a little bit more of it, see how it goes. So my dress up, darling. My roommate is on several Discords, and this was. A show that like apparently a bunch of the people in his Discord really were like looking forward to, and this was also recommended to us by another person as well, right? The premise of the show is this guy, his family is like his grandfather especially is like well known for making Hina dolls. Have you ever seen those, Kate? They're like a very traditional Japanese doll. He like really admired his grandfather's work, and he's very good at making the clothing for the Hina dolls, but he feels like the actual dolls themselves, they don't live, like he can't make them as like wonderfully as his master craftsman grandfather. And so he's like working on that, but like he doesn't have anybody, like he's embarrassed to like talk to any potential friends about like what he considers kind of like a weird old person hobby. So he's kind of like ignored and at school. Nobody like bullies him, but he doesn't really have any friends. And he meets a girl who's like super popular, you know, she's the classic beautiful, good at sports, you know, good grades, friends with everybody, all the boys want her, some of the girls want her. And they eventually meet in the sewing room where he finds out that she loves to cosplay, but she's a horrible what do you call it? She has like no talent at sewing. So she's passionate about the characters, like she has a bunch of characters, but her what do you call it? Her costumes are garbage. People compliment her, but she's like, people compliment, they don't compliment my outfit or like my dedication to the characters. They compliment that I'm hot. And so like, but what I want is like I want costumes that will like live up to like how I see you know the char you know I want the characters to look like I just don't have the skill. And so she like sees this Hina dolls and she's like, ah, you know, this doll is beautiful and the clothes are great. And so they basically become friends and he agrees to like what do you call it, work on his art, work on his costuming by making her cosplay costumes. And that's basically the episode ends with like them making their agreement that what do you call it, what do you call it, she will what do you call it, he'll make the costumes for her and they become friends, and that's how the episode ends.
Does it feel like it's a show like about fashion and costume making, or is that just sort of like the sort of useful tool to have this
I'm a
romance?
little unsure because, like, the show is really trying to sell you on the girl. And, like, and so it's a little hard to tell. Like, it's clearly the romance is a major aspect. How their friendship will turn into a romance is very clear. That's what's going to happen. But like, yeah, I'm not, that is a good question, and a question I have myself of you know, how much is this just a vehicle for them? But I mean, I feel like the cosplay is going to be important because it's very clear to me that since this girl is hot, they're gonna want to put her in various cosplay outfits. But how much is that just, look at this hot girl in hot cosplay outfits? Or is it actually about like the clothing and, you know, cosplay competitions and fashion and, you know, that it could go very easily, in my opinion, either way. Is this just a premise to show off this hot girl and hot outfits and then, you know, wish fulfillment romance? Or is there like going to be a little bit more meat on this bone? That I can't tell. I can definitely tell that they want you to think that this girl is hot. That much I know.
What about the main guy? Like, do you feel like he's like a sad sack, or is he like a character you'd actually root for?
Like he's very clearly passionate, but like he literally has no friends, which definitely puts him in like the sad sack category. Like basically his first friend at school is, hot cosplay girl. He is kind of giving off sad sack waves. He's not like totally the most milk and toast dude. Like at least since he's passionate about these Hina dolls, like he at least has like something going on, and like he clearly has a talent and skill.
Are these creepy dolls, or are they not creepy?
I kind of think all dolls are creepy, so.
I mean, but so it's like, I feel like I can picture it in anime, the like very like,
Like the super pale
I
skin.
imagine it in like a goth
Yeah.
outfit, but like,
Well, they have a more like traditional like kimono and stuff and
well, he's gonna have to make her a goth Lolita costume at some point.
I mean that's surely gonna happen. Do not think like don't think that show is not gonna happen, but it seemed kind of sweet, but I was a little like, is this just gonna be Sad Sack Boy falls in love with this perfect cosplay girlfriend. It didn't seem too pandering on her, but like I said, you're definitely supposed to think like, let's not pretend like this girl is hot is also not part of the like, selling point of this show.
I mean, romance is very specific. Everybody has what they like, everybody has what they don't like. That's the way it's set up for sure. Like, that's the way it works, and that's fine. I think that's exactly how it should work. Did you feel like this is something that is going to have some appeal outside of that? Or it's like, no, if this is your thing, this is for you. If it's not, like, there's nothing else here.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It could surprise me, but I feel like it's two. Like, if this is your thing, it's gonna be your thing. Like, it depends. Like, kind of like the show you kind of like maybe hoped it would be by your question. If they go a little more into like fashion and like building the characters and stuff like that, like. It could have a little more. That's when the show might have a more breakout appeal. Because, like, once again, most of this episode is the meet cute, as it were. I didn't see anything that immediately sold me it would have more depth. The fact that a bunch of people recommended this show. It's a little, once again, when we get a lot of recommendations, it's a little like, is it just because this hits your fetish or is it because it has depth? I didn't see anything that said, oh man, this clearly is gonna have a bunch of depth and this was super cool. But I don't think it couldn't, but I didn't get that immediately.
So is this something you feel like you're going to watch more of, or no?
I think it m largely depends on if my roommate watches it. Like, if he's watching it, I'll definitely. Like, there was nothing I was like, oh, I'm just gonna do something in my room because this show is totally not for me. But I did not object to anything. So if it's on, I will watch it and tell more. But if it isn't, I'm like, I wasn't so super sold. I'm still like trying to budget my like, what am I going to watch this season?
Before we get to our last show, which, like, obviously we're watching, and we will tell everybody that they need to watch it, even though, like, most of them won't. We did get a question about, like, do you feel like this is a strong season or not? And, like, is it, kind of a sleeper season? And, like, I definitely have, like, a couple of shows that I'm going to watch, but I definitely didn't come away with more shows than I could watch, which sometimes happens where I'm
Yeah.
like, well, I can't watch everything, guys.
Like, yeah, the only ones that I was like really set on watching were Sabaki Bisco and Requiem of a Rose King. And the other ones I was just gonna like give, like, all right, show, see if you could sell me.
Yeah, I'm basically on the same page as you. Obviously, I'm going to watch Dangerous Life Hacker in addition to those two, but I feel like between those things, also Ranking of Kings and Titan, like I sort of have enough that I didn't I but I did feel like I the season wasn't feeling particularly stand out to me.
No, I yeah, didn't seem like the weakest season we've ever seen, but it didn't seem like a super or like, and now I'm just because we're not together and we don't watch stuff, like we kind of usually like help supplement each other. Like the fact that like Ranking of Kings slipped there under our radar for so long makes me wonder if we like missed like one really awesome show this season.
I'm super bitter about that, but I'm almost caught up, and so everything is now fine. All right, so now we will wrap up the season with the most important show, which is Delicious Party Precure, the n latest in the Precure franchise. I tried to bring my expectations down, but I just can't, and like it's so far it's meeting them, so like I don't have to. This new one is about this evil kingdom that is stealing recipes and the taste of delicious food. Like, that's its evil superpower. So basically the most villainous, like they stole like the yumminess of Om Rice in the first episode, and they've like taken down like all of the like South American food trucks or like food street. Like, they're evil. They are the evilest.
Oh, you forgot to mention that they're Phantom Thieves.
I didn't forget. I was just getting to it. No, like, thank you. Yeah, not it's and it's not. I thought from the initial description of this show that there was a Phantom Thief, but no, there is an entire gang of Phantom Thieves. So that's excellent. The food fairies are the cutest fairies. You guys, they also their catchphrase is pee pee, which is hilarious on all levels, because they are recipe peas. And oh, I thought it was interesting, Al. I think you would probably mention this too, but I thought it was interesting that we're back to a main precure who's like ultra competent. Like, she feels like she's not a like kind of a more ditzy precure. She's like the I can do anything precure.
I also thought that was interesting that there's like a main guy character who's like their like mentor helper. Well, there's only one precure right now, but like and he doesn't feel like Baby Holder Joe.
I was thinking of him too, yeah. Rosemary, he's not quite seeking out the precure, but like his role is important, like, so yeah, that was an interesting twist and surprise.
I don't want to go too much into it because you haven't finished it, and but I think Rosemary gets a little more depth and just an interesting dynamic with the second episode as well.
Another interesting thing, I don't think they've done this before, is they have like barrier dimensions that they go into to fight instead of like we've had where either the town does get hurt or like the town it gets erased when the battle is over, but I or like any damage, you know, doesn't stay or it does stay, but in this case they like create like a separate dimension where they go and fight. So I thought that was an interesting new dynamic.
Because other tokusatsu and magical girl shows have had that premise, but yeah, it's new to prequel.
You guys, this show is so cute. It's so full of food. It's full of energy. It's full of thieves and cuteness. And it's just, it was so, I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, once again, it does seem like they were like, all right, this season of Preco really needs to hit that important reverse thieves market.
Like food and Phantom Thieves, like, and the I also like that the they're collecting recipes. Like, I hope that there's like actual like more cooking, because like right now it's been, you know, like I think one of the characters works in a restaurant, like works in her family restaurant, so like I think there will also be actual cooking. So like, yeah, I also thought she was gonna be cure rice. I was like, is she cure rice? Which would have been amazing, because the show definitely, yeah, it's also like so far been like, you know, Japanese food, but like there was other foods that, you know, like are in danger. Oh, and she has a friend who like almost immediately knows something is going on.
Oh yeah, and there's a
So I'm
male
like,
friend.
is he gonna be the first? The first boy pre here, like, or is he just gonna be, you know, gaslighted the whole the whole season?
I did appreciate, I don't know if we mentioned this in the Tropical Rouge, that poor girl that they were gaslighting. She finally got to find out what was really going on at the very end of the series, and what do you call it? What do you call it? She could break out of her gaslighting, and she was like, "I knew it was true," which was nice for her.
Yeah, I just really look forward to this show. I look forward to talking about it more. Oh, like, you know, Rosemary is like a grown man, so they didn't do the Preacher thing where like the main character somehow convinces her family that like this random stranger should live with them. They were like, no, he will live in the guest this guest house like of the inn of our childhood friend. Like, that's what an adult person does. And it's like, yes,
Please
this.
stop brainwashing families into adopting people.
Let's not do that anymore. We have the, oh, we have a blue-haired rich girl. Like, it's just, it feels like it's got a lot of the old, but it's also got a lot of new stuff. And yeah, I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I'm also curious about that the yellow the girl who works at the ramen place. Yeah, it looks like it definitely feels like a strong season. Yeah, it'll be fun to see this one. And once again, very much up, like what do you call it? Them clearly trying to get that reverse thief market.
But it also feels like, I feel like this feels like a really fun one that if you've never watched Precure before, obviously I'm completely biased against by this, but like it's on Crunchyroll, it's easy to check out. It could be a really fun moment in your week. Like, I'll never stop trying to get people to watch Precure, but I do feel like this one has a lot of good stuff that I think everybody will like. All right, everybody, that's it for another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. We will see you next month.
See you guys. Bye-bye.